From the University of Arkansas at Little Rock, KUAR Public Radio brings you Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow, the only program on radio today dedicated to the preservation of comparative generational thought, with your host, Phil Marriage. Welcome to the Crossroads of History.
Hi, everyone, and welcome to another 2010 edition of Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow here in Little Rock. I'm Phil Marriage, your host. Glad you guys are with us here today on one of the hotter days in the summer. We've got a great topic for you today. Our topic is one that in the 10 years we've been on the air, we have not covered this topic yet. You would have thought we might have by now. We're going to talk about the Vietnam War today. But I do want to remind you before we get into the discussion today that if you would like to listen to the longer version, and I guarantee you this one will probably be a pretty long version, that material that we don't get on the air today will be available on our podcast, which you can get at yttshow.org or on the KUAR.org website. It's also available on iTunes. And we have a new source for you to be able to pick up the MP3s. It's a new site called MixCloud.com. So there's several sources where you can listen to the longer version of our program today. Vietnam War, I was thinking about this topic. In fact, it woke me up earlier this morning before the day even got started. The Vietnam War is a time for people my age, I'm 61, that really stands out. It's one of those iconic times in your life where you either were involved with it, you know somebody was, or you might have been a resistor. Whatever the case may be, if you're a middle-aged person, a boomer, you probably have a tie to the Vietnam War that's unlike the other generations. And that's one of the reasons I wanted to bring it up in our topic today is the fact that we have a couple more generations, the Xers, the Millennials, and now we have a new generation being born, youngsters, that do not have a tie to the Vietnam War the way those in the GI generation and the Boomer generation did. I wanted to talk about the various aspects about it. And again, one of the interesting things from my perspective anyway, at my age, I'm about as far removed from the World War I era as a lot of the young people being born now are from the Vietnam era. So I think it's really an important time to talk about various aspects of the Vietnam War. We've talked about other armed forces issues on our program in the years past, but never really focused in on the Vietnam War. I have three guests with me here today, two in the studio with me. First speaking from the older generation will be Dub Allen. He's a Vietnam vet. He was a Marine for a number of years. He was a photojournalist over there, one of their public affairs personnel. He's right now with the MacArthur Museum for Military History, where he's a commissioner and a freelance photographer still. Dub Allen, glad to have you with us here.
Thank you very much.
And also, Dub was with us on our program we did a couple of years ago on the armed forces. Also with us here in the studio, speaking from the younger generation, is Bobby Ampazon. He formerly came from the Detroit area, and he was a writer for several different newspapers and magazines, and presently he's with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the Arkansas Life magazine. Bobby Ampazon, glad to have you with us here today.
Hi, Phil. I'm glad to join you.
And then joining us from Clearwater, Florida, speaking from that middle generation, is Dan Garza. He was a Ranger in the Army. He also is a writer for the VeteransToday.com, and he has an Arkansas connection with some in-laws that live here in the Little Rock area. So, Dan, glad to have you with us here today, too.
I'm glad you invited me.
Normally when we do the program, those of you who listen to us all the time, you know, I usually start with the older generation and I work towards the younger generation, but I want to turn all that on our head today, mainly for the reason that we're doing this topic. I'm very curious about what the younger generation's perspectives are on the Vietnam War. So I want to start with you, Bobby Ampazon. As you look to your age group, younger, a little bit older than you, what is the current attitude right now or mindset or knowledge base, whatever you might want to call that, from that younger generation looking back to the Vietnam War? What does the Vietnam War mean to younger people?
I think a lot of my generation saw the Vietnam War principally as an event in which young people weren't given a choice. That is to say that the government did draft them into the military and a bunch of unwilling people sort of were flown overseas for really debatably, I guess, when you consider Korea, but certainly the first war that had as an active component of strategy mass confusion, you know, the sense that we don't know why we're over there, and climatologically speaking, a very, very foreign place. So I think for my generation, this came to the fore back in 2003 and 2004 and up to the present with the wars in Afghanistan and Iraq. Certainly, I guess Afghanistan in the beginning wasn't a war that I think people debated heavily. We had just been attacked after 9/11, and the Taliban and Al-Qaeda were a clear and present danger to us. But at the beginning of Iraq, I think a lot of people in my generation heard the term quagmire And I think we thought, you know, is this going to be a second Vietnam, a sort of war that was foisted upon us, that sort of dragged us in en masse? You know, I don't think that that's really happened, actually. So there has been a pretty clear difference between the two events. Certainly, the soldiers we have overseas were not conscripted. So
your generation, you think, made a distinction between the Afghan War and the Iraq War in terms, as it compared to Vietnam? You didn't really compare Afghan to Vietnam, but you compared Iraq to Vietnam?
I guess it's hard for me to speak for my entire generation. I personally, for sure, did not think of the incursion into Afghanistan as another Vietnam. Although maybe I should have, because they call it, this, you know, for the Soviets, I think it was their Vietnam. That seemed to me a proportional response, whereas Iraq, I think initially, didn't seem responsive in nature, but more conceptual or theoretical. Mm-hmm. I think fundamentally, back to your question, I don't think that my generation, I don't think we really understand the Vietnam War from a sort of on-the-ground perspective, either from the standpoint of the soldiers who went over there or the students who were left behind that led sort of the protests and the whole protest movement. I think sort of both elements of that were so strongly a part of the Vietnam War era has not been an active part of my mm-hmm. generation.
Now, at 33, you're a pretty young guy, really, when we think about the various generations. Can you remember much of how you were educated in school, high school, and there on, and from there? Did you guys even talk about the Vietnam War?
I'll tell you, that's an interesting question. When I was a senior in high school, the very last semester of my senior year, for the first time in my 4 years at that high school, a modern history class was offered. Up till then, history sort of ended at World War II. And we spent a lot of that class sort of talking about Vietnam. And the way that we talked about it was largely influenced by the photojournalism coming out of that war, the iconic images of Vietnamese children running away from bombed villages, and of course the fall of Saigon and that helicopter topped the rooftop of the embassy. And it was taught by a Vietnam-era veteran. So from his mouth, I think we felt the tragedy of that whole war firsthand, and from a soldier's perspective too, not from that of someone who had stayed behind or someone too young to remember.
Do you recall if the educational material was given to you from a political perspective, or was it from a historical perspective?
I remember thinking that it was from a pretty disheveled perspective. I remember thinking that the chapters we had on the Greeks and Greek and Roman civilizations and you know, the Napoleonic era, the two big world wars, were so much more, it seemed like, encapsulated. It had a beginning, it had an end. This is what it was. Here were the principal players. Vietnam seemed to be, well, it loosely started after World War II, and the French used to be there, and then they left, and then we came in, and first it was a few advisors. And then, you know, then it became a real war, and then we sort of lost that war, but not exactly. And now I think it's more informative, but I remember at the time thinking, it's hard for me as a 17-year-old to make sense of this if the author of this book on the Vietnam War hasn't really mm-hmm. made sense of it.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's move up to Dan Garza in that middle generation perspective. We'll come back to a lot of different things. We're just getting started on our discussion here today. But Dan Garza, I'd kind of like to have you come with the same perspective from a middle generation person. You are obviously were a Ranger and served in the services, but at your age, a middle-aged person there, what was your take on the Vietnam War?
Well, I was exposed to a variety of situations. First being that when I turned 18, I had to register for the Selective Service at the post office. It was a law. You would go to jail if you didn't do it.
Was the draft still going when you turned 18?
No, it was not still going. This was after the Vietnam War, 1978. So I was exposed to a repercussion as a direct result of that war. I didn't actually enlist till I was 23. At that time, that would have made it 1983, there were still quite a bit of the leadership within the Army that had served in Vietnam, a lot of the higher leadership. I have actually on a college transcript, expert in guerrilla warfare.
Wow.
And they put guerrilla warfare expert on 6 hours. I mean... Okay, so that was a direct result of Vietnam. We were trained to fight in a jungle environment. There was the Jungle Operation Training Center out in Panama. There was various places that they would send us just for training. What I was also exposed to was the returning Vietnam combatant, Marines, sailors, airmen, women, men alike, Marines, and the way they were treated by the American people was horrendous. You know, I don't care if, you know, you don't agree with the war. I mean, there's an organization that's Veterans Against the Iraq and Afghanistan Wars. It doesn't, you know, there's a way to do it. Don't spit on the men and women that did serve. You know, they come home and they're called baby killers. I mean, they discuss things like don't wear your uniform when you go home because that's how bad it is when you get back to the world. I know the way we were treated when we went into town and stuff. Everybody knew we were soldiers, and they wanted to make their buck off of us, and they didn't really care.
Not a lot of respect.
None.
Mm-hmm. Now, Bobby Ampazon, that was different for you. You've seen a lot more respect, correct?
Yeah, In fact, I think it's interesting. Dan Garza had said that he remembers, I don't know if he heard this firsthand or had heard other soldiers say that when they were when they came back home, they were sort of warned against wearing their uniforms, or at least advised that probably wearing your civilian clothing was a good idea. And I can't help but think the complete opposite has happened with my generation. And you know what? It's been a great thing where people go out of their way. In fact, it seems sometimes forced, and say, thank you for your service. Mm-hmm. You see a guy, and just yesterday I saw a guy on a motorcycle in full camouflage with a monstrous, it's not even a backpack. What is it like? It's like a giant duffel bag. It was in camouflage too. He's going down the highway, and I'm thinking, first off, that, you know, he's just going to fly off the motorcycle because he's got this functionally what a giant sail on his back. And I saw two separate cars pass him and honk and wave. And I thought that's clearly because he is, if not in uniform, in a uniform that we would identify him with the armed services. As I said earlier, I think as forced as it is to stop, you know, a vet or a soldier on the street and say thank you for your service, what a complete 180 and a really fortunate one, you know, a fortunate shift in attitudes for my generation, mm-hmm. for sure.
Now we're going to jump back to the older generation. Dub Allen's been sitting here to listen through the younger and the middle generation perspectives. Dub Allen was there. Dub Allen came back from that time frame. Dub, your generation in service and also the one prior to you, how was what was actually going on different than what you've heard from the younger and the middle?
I was in boot camp when the Gulf of Tonkin incident took place.
Which would have been what year?
That was August the 5th, 1964.
64, mm-hmm. Dub, when you were in Vietnam, how old were you when you were there?
25.
You were 25. See, the average age, I believe, that was right at 23 or a little bit younger than
younger,
that.
Younger, I believe it was younger.
A little bit younger. So when you were there and you were seeing new draftees come to that war from that generation that is now older, like you are and like I am, did you see any kind of difference in the attitude of the draftees as versus like World War II, Korea, from those other times? Because we saw it here, there was a difference about the draft in the States, but did you see it there?
Not in Vietnam, no.
Well, let me ask you, Dub, also from your perspective, when you heard, as we were talking earlier from Bobby Ampazon and that younger generation, and then from Dan Garza in the middle, the wars that have been fought since the Vietnam War, how do you compare the generational perspectives that they have for those wars compared to the Vietnam War?
My guys made sure that they weren't treated like we were when they came home.
Tell me more about that. What do you mean?
It was the Vietnam veterans that Desert Storm, Desert Shield, that made sure and were at airports to meet them that they weren't treated the way most of our guys were.
And how were your guys treated?
Very shabbily.
Dub, when you look at guys your age now, the Vietnam vets, have they recovered from those negative feelings from that war?
No. It's still there. But we have grown up and gotten past it to make sure nobody else suffers like we did.
Can I say thank you for doing that?
Thank you. I appreciate that.
No, thank you. Thank you.
Well, tell me what you mean about there, Dan Garza.
Well, what he says is the absolute truth. The Vietnam veterans paved the way for the ones coming in behind them, and went through things that they shouldn't have had to have gone through. But because it did happen, it won't happen again, because I wanted to thank him. I have a lot of friends that are Vietnam veterans, and it's true what he says. They're not, they have, it's not over for them. It just isn't. It was a horrible thing. Horrible, horrible thing.
If you want to see something really remarkable, the next time you meet a Vietnam veteran, look him square in the eyes and say, "Welcome home." You will be surprised how many guys have never had that said to them.
From a different perspective now, do you think that's from as a result of their service in Vietnam that they still have this?
I think it's a result of their experiences when they got home.
When they got home.
And they found that they found themselves unwelcomed among their peers. And I think there was even a little bit of chasm between the veterans of World War II and the Vietnam veterans.
Deb?
Yes, that is very true.
What do you mean?
I'm a member of the American Legion. And it wasn't until 1966 that the American Legion allowed Vietnam veterans to be a member.
Till when? Was it till when?
1966.
Okay. We're talking about the Vietnam War today here on Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow with my guest, Dub Allen. That last voice you heard, he's speaking from the older generation. He's a freelance photographer now. He's also with the MacArthur Museum for Military History, one of their commissioners, a Vietnam vet. And then Dan Garza is joining us from Clearwater, Florida. He is in that middle generation, a former Ranger, and he writes for theveteranstoday.com. And also in the studio with me, Bobby Ampazon, who's with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the Arkansas Life magazine. Getting back to our discussion here, I do want to bring you guys, all three of you guys, to a term that I've heard about military after each war is that they talk about the lessons learned. I want to, again, start in that younger generation and go backward. Bobby Ampazon, as you look at the Vietnam War, what were the lessons learned from that your generation sees from that war?
Growing up, the two things that I heard the most about the Vietnam War is, one, the government wouldn't let us win, that we could have won that war, but because of, I don't know, diplomatic pressures.
Lyndon Johnson would do fine. Sam Johnson's boy, as the book was titled.
Yeah, there were, because of those, there were manufactured constraints on our armed services that functionally hogtied us and made winning a decades-long pursuit, if not impossible. So that was the one thing I heard.
Well, what did your generation think about that? That knowledge of that particular aspect of being having your hands tied. What did you guys think of that?
Growing up, I didn't understand that, and I don't think a big part of that debate was, you know, why didn't we use any kind of nuclear weapons? And as a product of the 80s, I had to weigh, and again, I was a child, but I had to weigh the ignominy that is losing Vietnam with the horror that is using a nuclear weapon. The other thing that I think was a parable that was, again, pounded into the brains of young people in my generation is the obstacles of fighting a war in a foreign country where the native people there have an immediate threat, and ours is a conceptual threat, the threat of the spread of communism. I guess the lesson we took away, whether or not it's right or whether or not it needs more explanation, is that, you know, people will always defend their actual physical territory with a great more vigor than we will as, you know, sort of ambassadors of democracy against the Red Menace.
So your generation had a more political perspective on the why of the war?
Yeah, I would say it's almost entirely political.
I would like to ask Dub a question.
Sure.
I don't know if I'm correct or not, so I would like to clarify. Was war ever declared?
No. Neither. It wasn't in Vietnam, and hasn't been. Matter of fact, it hadn't been declared since World War II.
That's what I just say. It was a police action.
No. That was Harry.
Okay, I'm wrong.
That was Harry Truman's phraseology to keep from saying war in Korea, and I correct people. No, that was not a police action.
War. I'm glad I asked that question of you, because I don't like, I've learned as I've gotten older, if you don't know what the hell you're talking about, don't say it. Having said that, yes, I agree, Bobby, our hands were tied. I've read articles where North Vietnamese generals have stated, I don't know why they didn't continue to bomb us. They had us beat. We were ready to surrender. The lessons that were learned from my generation were huge, because of what happened when the vets came home. They realized that we could no longer have a draft. That was a great lesson.
Well, Dan, let me ask you this. If we're hearing from Bobby Ampezon that the younger generation kind of looks at the Vietnam War and lessons learned from a political perspective, I'm almost thinking I'm hearing you talk about that your time frame looks at it from the social aspects that have impacted your time frame. Am I getting close there at all, that you see these interactions?
Well, yeah, to go back to what I said earlier, what happened to U.S. military veterans when they returned home from Vietnam has had a big and profound effect and impact on what I decided to do with my life. And if what you want to call it is the Vietnam veterans passing the baton, it's got to be passed. Otherwise, you know, somebody's got to pick up the bayonet. You know, we're losing approximately 2,000 World War II vets a day. That's a lot. Somebody still has to, you know, carry the torch so it doesn't happen again.
Well, Dub Allen, same question for you. Those of your generation that came through it, what do you see the lessons that were learned from the Vietnam that you would pass on to the other generations?
Togetherness. The only people you can depend on is the people on your left and right. Vietnam veterans still will gravitate to each other. Marines are different, again. A Marine is a Marine is a Marine. And so whether it was a guy that came in 1775 or a guy that graduated from boot camp today, he's welcomed into the fraternity to the family.
Well, Dan Garza, let me take the conversation in a different direction. It's sort of in the way of the lessons learned, but after the Vietnam War, we've had Grenada, we've had a few other things that we've done.
Panama
we've had the first Iraq War, Desert Storm, and then the Iraq War, now Afghanistan, all kinds of things going on. The wars that have happened there, the total loss of life compared to the loss of life in the Vietnam War, there's no comparison at all. I haven't done the math on it myself, but I know that we had something over 58,000 die in Vietnam, and we've come nowhere close to that in the total of the other wars since then. Here's my question for you. The types of wars that your generation saw and has seen since the Vietnam War, is there a way to categorize those wars? I'm going to try and be as politically sensitive as I can right here, but what the thought that came to me in the middle of the night before coming to our recording here today on it is that we've had a lot of piece of cake wars since the Vietnam War. And what I mean by that is that we've gone in, we've done these little surgical things, but we haven't had a war that cost us like the Vietnam War did. And I'm wondering if your generation, and then again 2 years, Bobby, what your attitudes are on the costs of war compared to the Vietnam War that you've seen since the Vietnam War. Dan?
Well, let me put this into perspective. I participated at a church service on Memorial Day weekend that Sunday, and all they asked me to do was go in front of the congregation and read off a little yellow sticky note what it said, and I was like the fifth or sixth person. I had the Gulf War. 276 were lost, and the man before me, a couple in front of me, 58,000. We lost 16 in Grenada. It's not even apples to oranges to me. Thank God I didn't go to Vietnam, Dub. I wrote an article for Veterans Today. In the last paragraph, I do say, I don't know about you, but when I raised my right hand and said, repeat after me, I state your name, the thought did come to mind that I may die doing this. And I could not, and I volunteered, and I could not possibly imagine what it must have been like to have been drafted.
I think that from my perspective, one of the most astonishing things about the present situation, we've already pointed out that in Vietnam we lost 58,000 of our countrymen. And today it's not one-tenth of that in Afghanistan and Iraq combined.
No.
And I am just, again, having never experienced Vietnam, I'm still dumbstruck that we can be, eighth and seventh and eighth year, respectively, of sustained combat operations in two separate countries. And you can listen to an entire All Things Considered, and they won't have a story from either front. This is a two-pronged effort, and it takes a back seat to, and again, I'm not diminishing something as large as an oil spill, but it certainly has taken a backseat to that. And I wanted to ask Dub if he can bring some perspective to this, because my impression of the men and women back home when the Vietnam War was raging is that every night Dan Rather came into their living room and reported from an airstrip somewhere in Vietnam.
And body bags.
I think that from my perspective, one of the most astonishing things about the present situation, we've already pointed out that in Vietnam we lost 58,000 of our countrymen. And today it's not one-tenth of that in Afghanistan and Iraq combined.
No.
And I am just, again, having never experienced Vietnam, I'm still dumbstruck that we can be, eighth and seventh and eighth year, respectively, of sustained combat operations in two separate countries, and you can listen to an entire All Things Considered, and they won't have a story from either front. This is a two-pronged effort, and it takes a back seat to, and again, I'm not diminishing something as large as an oil spill, but it certainly has taken a back seat to that. And I wanted to ask Dub if he can bring some perspective to this, because my impression of the men and women back home when the Vietnam War was raging is that every night Dan Rather came into their living room and reported from an airstrip somewhere in Vietnam.
And body bags.
The difference is the growth of the media and the lack of veterans in the media. Regardless of the station or the network or what have you, I can sit and watch the news and correct them every night. Wrong terminology, flat out not knowing what's going on. They've never been taught it, and they've never seen it, so they're totally ignorant of it, and it does not hit in their brain that this is a story where people are dying.
Folks, I hope you've enjoyed listening to our program today on the Vietnam War. Again, it's one of the tougher topics we've had to cover. A lot more information in our podcast at yttshow.org or on kuar.org. You can click on the Listen Now buttons. I do want to thank all of my guests for being with me here today. Speaking from the older generation, and here in studio with me has been Dub Allen. He was a Vietnam War vet. He's with the MacArthur Museum for Military History right now, one of their commissioners, and still does a lot of freelance shooting. Dub, thanks so much for being with us here again today.
Thank you for having me.
And then joining us from Clearwater, Florida, speaking from that middle generation perspective, has been Dan Garza. He was a Ranger while he was in the service, and he has written articles for the VeteransToday.com. And Dan, thanks again so much, and I hope your relatives here in the Little Rock area were able to hear you today.
Oh, you know what? When I talk, they never listen to me anyway. So, the benefits were great for me to have met you, Dub, Phil, Bobby. It's just been a very pleasant experience for me. I enjoyed it. It was a very constructive conversation, and I learned a lot from it. So thanks for having me. Thanks again, Dan.
Thanks, Dan. Appreciate it.
And then also here in the studio, speaking from that younger generation perspective, has been Bobby Ampazon, a former Detroit area person, but now here in the Little Rock area, and he's working right now with the Arkansas Democrat Gazette and the Arkansas Life magazine. Bobby, thanks so much for speaking from that younger generation.
You're welcome, Phil. I'm a fan of the show.
Well, thank you. Thank you, too. And again, those of you listening to the program today, catch the podcast. It's a great podcast, a lot of information, probably one of the best podcasts you will hear in our whole series. Again, thanks for listening. We'll see you next time. Yesterday, Today, and Tomorrow is a production of KUAR Public Radio, Little Rock.